Last Word on Today FM.
Fourth birthday time for this environment spot on The Last Word. John Gibbons has come in to me and reminded me that it's 4 years since he first started his weekly spot. Happy birthday, John.
Thank you, Matt.
We'll discuss, though, something I think that might take the shine off it a little bit for you. Apparently, the government is getting ready to authorise an LNG, liquefied natural gas facility, for the country. A top priority decision to be made in the next few weeks after essentially the Green Party and government had managed to block it in the last administration.
Yeah, that's about sums it up, really. I mean, the Greens have kind of held the line on this for the last 5 years, and the minute they're out of government, we're back to promoting LNG. Something we talked about, you might recall, Matt, a couple of weeks back, just to start with, right? LNG, liquid natural gas, much of which, of course, if it's coming across the Atlantic, will be fracked.
Explain again your problem with fracked gas.
Yeah, fracked gas, to give it its full title, hydraulic fracturing. This basically involves setting off underground explosions to shatter seams and release the gas from them. So it contaminates watercourses, environmentally incredibly destructive, but also it leads to huge emissions, as you can imagine, when you're setting off huge underground explosions of fugitive methane. Now, methane, as we know, is an incredibly powerful and dangerous greenhouse gas. So releasing methane, even, and this is something really that people, it can be difficult to grasp. Methane is so powerful that if you get more than 2-3% of a given amount of LNG leaking, it becomes worse from a climate point of view, Matt, than burning coal. That's how incredibly powerful methane is. And so what we can guarantee you is that LNG that is sourced from fracking will have high levels of fugitive methane connected with it, which means it is incredibly climate destructive. And I'm really astonished to hear Micheál Martin, a politician who I personally would have given a lot of credit for in the last few years as a guy who's been on a journey. I was looking back in my own files earlier today. He told the Dublin Climate Summit a couple of years back. He said, the world is heading towards the abyss on climate. Now we have Micheál Martin in 2005 putting his foot on the accelerator and taking us closer to that abyss. Now, the government, as you said, they might be arguing that this represents security. You know, we want...
Well, they are. They're saying basically, yeah, look, to keep the lights on, to keep the houses heated, we need enough material to generate the power. And we are still fossil fuel dependent because we have not been able to get the alternative sources in place quickly enough. We don't have the wind farms producing enough. I know they're producing a lot, but they're not producing enough, and neither are all the solar farms. And in the meantime, the belief is, given that we have a growing population in the country, more and more need, that we're going to need continued fossil fuel. And actually, their argument seems to be that LNG might be one of the least worst ways to do it.
Well, as I've just outlined, it's one of the worst ways to do it. But let me also address the energy security issue, right? Europe pretty much stopped buying gas from Russia because it didn't want to be in thrall to a dictatorship. We now have a situation where we have a dictatorship setting up on the other side of the Atlantic. Now, imagine a situation, Matt.
Is that not an extreme description?
You think so? I don't know about you.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, I don't believe so. We have an autocratic regime installed that is using economic levers to bully its trading partners. Now, imagine a situation where Ireland, thanks to this device, ended up being strategically dependent on the whim and the mood of Donald Trump.
We see the other argument on that is that this is a way to mitigate against the potential economic jackboot of Donald Trump and put upon Ireland, that we do deals with him in relation to tariffs and taxes by agreeing to buy an amount of LNG annually from the United States.
Yeah, it reminds me, I think it was Churchill said that sort of kowtowing to dictators is like sort of making friends with a crocodile in the hope that it will eat you last. And I think we need to be clear about our own foreign policy and, you know, bootlicking to unstable autocrats, I don't think is a good way to secure it. I think what we need to do, Matt, particularly, and this is the Shannon Foynes region we're talking about, this is the hub of our offshore wind industry. The last thing we need to do is to be building LNG facilities in there. What we need to be doing is to be putting the boot down and accelerating the offshore renewable revolution, which, by the way, we have the licenses coming through. If we keep our focus on it and we don't let this government drift off into nonsense and nostalgia about gas. And if I had something else I can say about gas very briefly, I looked at some stats in relation to our own gas grid between now and 2035. It's in what's called a death spiral. That means that we can expect that natural gas is on the way out as a fuel in Ireland. And it's quite likely that by the mid-2030s, we will not have an operational gas grid. It'll have been completely replaced by electrification. And a unit of gas, Matt, it's estimated by 2035, is likely to cost 10 times what it costs today because of falling demand. And that's the death spiral. So the last thing we need to do is to allow ourselves to get hooked on climate damaging natural gas, which, by the way, it's a legacy technology that's on its way out. What this country needs and what we have a fantastic position to do on is to kick ahead on electrifying our domestic situation, electrifying our transport and electrifying industry.
Makes us very heavily dependent on electricity.
Absolutely.
Which makes us very vulnerable when the power supplies get cut.
The funny thing about that is that with the distributed electrical system, especially as we build more and more interconnectors into Europe, we're opening one, for example, directly to France in 2026. We already have interconnectors into Scotland and we have another one through Northern Ireland. We need to build more interconnection to Europe, join an extended European renewable grid that we will, by the way, 90% of the time, Matt, will be a net energy exporter onto the European grid. But that means when we need it, we can buy it back in. There are also, of course, things we can do with renewable energy. For example, we can create liquid fuels like methanol and so on. So we can use them as storage, creating them through hydrogen to spin up power stations, creating them, by the way, from renewable energy and getting away from fossil gas completely. We need to get out of the business, Matt, of burning fossil fuels, no matter what they are.
You know, you mentioned things like hydrogen, but you saw the story internationally. Airbus, the major aircraft manufacturer, Europe's answer to Boeing, has said now it's going to delay its plans to develop a hydrogen-powered commercial aircraft by the middle of next decade, and it has cited slower than expected developments in technology.
That's right, and this is something I've been harping on, I think, with you a number of times, that the aviation industry has been on a way and a prayer for quite a long time now with this magical acronym called SAF, otherwise known as Sustainable Aviation Fuels. We even have an SAF research facility sponsored by Ryanair, no less, inside Trinity College Dublin. What we're looking at, these magical SAFs, one of them, for example, is hydrogen, others through biofuels and so on. The question really is, can you replace the billions of litres of fossil fuels that we're currently burning in the form of aviation kerosene? Short answer is absolutely not. If we wanted to divert, for example, tens of millions of acres or hectares of agricultural land to feeding aircraft, this would seem like a really strange time to do that.
Okay, but you don't see the potential for hydrogen now, really, do you?
No, I mean, well, hydrogen has very limited applications, Matt. So I'll give you a quick example. If we had a huge amount of onshore renewable energy, say, coming into the Foynes estuary, and we wanted to create a green hydrogen, in other words, hydrogen that is directly created from renewable energy, it's a very energy-intensive process. But if you have spare renewable energy, you can create hydrogen through hydrolysis, and you can store it locally. For example, that would allow you to power up some power stations with it. What it's no use for is, for example, powering aircraft. It's not going to work. It won't work, for example, to inject hydrogen into the grid. Bord Gáis Éireann and Gas Networks Ireland have got various plans that include injecting hydrogen into the grid in Ireland. It won't happen.
Okay, you have some good news, though. You believe lots of people listening may be eligible for a scheme worth over €5,000 towards upgrading their home.
That's right. I think one of the real, and it's a very real bugbear for anybody thinking about a home upgrade, is the upfront cost. And the thing here is that for most of us, like, you know, for example, if you take a Sky subscription, they don't charge you £500 or £600 for the box. They build it into your subscription. So we need to get, when we want people to take particular, I suppose, routes, you want to get rid of the things that are the biggest obstacles. And upfront costs are the number one thing that turn people off from doing things like home renovations. So what's happened here basically is we've got a 500 million euro pool via the European Investment Bank. And this is going to be made available to homeowners. You can borrow anywhere between 5,000 and up to 75,000 euros over a 10-year period. Now, if you want the best rates on this, which are about 3.69%, you need to be borrowing between 20 and 75,000. Now, obviously, the borrowing has to be for an energy upgrade, and that energy upgrade has to be SEAI approved. So it is limited to that. Now, having said that, you're allowed to spend up to a quarter of the borrowing on non-energy upgrade things. So it could be, you know, new carpets or a suite of furniture, etc. So, but three quarters of it has to be spent on energy upgrading. And the idea here, Matt, is to make it easy and less painful for people to be shelling out. And it's an awful bind at the moment that if you want to do the right thing, you want to upgrade your house, you go along to the bank, they could be charging 9, 10, 11% interest rates. And over a 10-year period, that could add another 10, 20, 30,000 to your project. So I think this is an incredibly useful thing. It's been administered, I know, through OnPost. They're one of the participating agencies in this, and I think also some other local banks. But it kind of gets us on in, moving in the right direction here.
One final one, and I'm putting this to you as a former farmer, as somebody who grew up on a farm. You believe that many farmers are coming around to your thinking that their job has been made more difficult by climate change.
Yeah, I mean, this is really reporting on a survey that was carried out by Chagast and the Climate Change Advisory Council. They did interviews, first of all questionnaires, then face-to-face interviews with 200 farmers up and down Ireland. And what they found basically is that they're very, very down about the impacts of climate change. And various farmers have said that they find themselves unprepared and poorly supported. They don't feel that people understand the difficulties that they're having. The kind of things we're talking about, Matt. Sodden fields, poor grass growth, late planting, delayed fertilising, not able to get the cattle out onto the land, for example. I think it was in two winters ago, we had a situation where cattle went in September and they couldn't come back out, I think, until the following May. That led to a fodder crisis. These are all extremely stressful things. So what we're seeing here is that farmers are experiencing climate impacts more than most of us. And the very simple reason for that is that, unlike the rest of us, they work outdoors. Some of the things that farmers have been saying, I think, are really interesting. One of the respondents said there's a fundamental shift going on here, and it's beyond the typical weather variations. And a dairy farmer said, I don't think we thought the rate of change would have been so fast as it is. And he said there were farmers who a year ago didn't accept the reality of climate change, but, quote, now they're starting to believe it. They're believing it because they're living it and they're feeling it. And
yeah, the report also highlights that non-typical seasons were described at length across all farming systems using terms such as constant spring.
Yeah, constant spring is a phrase I've never heard before. And what that means essentially is that they don't know what season it is. And the same, of course, goes for pollinators and so on. And then another farmer said, what's summer anymore?
Yeah, that's right. That was the sheep farmer who says, summertime, look at what's summer anymore.
Yeah, and the point about it is, Matt, that the one thing you need in farming is predictability. You need to know that when you're putting a crop in spring that you'll be able to get machines in. You also want to know that you'll be able to get that crop out again in the summer. You also want, if you're managing livestock, you want to be able to manage them predictably. And when they're out in the land, of course, one of our boasts in Ireland is that we have animals on the land maybe 200 plus days a year. Now, that doesn't apply. And also it means, for example, that they're having difficulties with things like slurry storage because of the incessant rainfall. And these are things you and I have talked about many, many times over 4 years, 185 episodes, 37 hours, Matt. Can you believe it? If there was a big download available for what the conversations we've been having for the last 4 years, it would be 37 hours long. And are we getting anywhere?
John Givens, thank you very much.
The Last Word on Today FM.